All right, welcome back everyone to another episode of Time Out Talk. We're your host, Raphael Singer.
And Hunter Leon.
And a lot has happened since our last podcast, free agency, summer league, debut of a lot of really high profile rookies, and we have a lot to talk about today, so let's just jump right into it. Hunter actually went to Las Vegas, was able to watch summer league, experience a lot of these rookies in person, and as well as chat to a lot of NBA folks. So I guess we should start with you just breaking down your experience, Hunter. What was it like at the NBA Summer League? And yeah, just tell us about that.
Yeah, I mean, I've gone every year for the past like 6 years. I've gone since 2017. I saw the Lonzo Ball, Kyle Kuzma Lakers. That was like who I followed when I initially had gone there. I got to see a lot of guys, Magic Johnson, Rob Pelinka, when when they were the big guys at the Lakers. Jeannie Buss was there. Like I saw everyone. It was a very different experience back then. I mean, there was still a lot of hype for Lonzo coming in, being an LA kid. Summer league isn't too far. It's in Las Vegas, so a lot of people did travel to go see Lonzo. But this year was just different. Never in my life have I had to wait in a 4-hour line before summer league to get into the building to make sure I won a seat. Like this was I got to summer league at 9:30 in the morning, and my brother and I were waiting there until 12:30, in the hot sun, just beating down on us 100 degrees, just to get the seats we wanted. This is the kind of line we're talking about. And there was somebody who got there, or like a group of guys, at 4 a.m. I mean, we're talking
Jesus
some
Christ.
crazy stuff. Like, you'd never see that at Summer League. What's the best thing about Summer League to me is just it's very casual. Everyone who's there is a massive NBA fan. You're not getting casual fans NBA Summer League, but the players are
Yeah.
really open. They're really nice, and they know that it's Summer League. The people who are there are going to be uber fans of the NBA, and they're really chill about taking photos. So, really all around nice guys. And I was sitting right behind the away bench. So I got to see a lot of the players. I was sitting mainly next to player family, some guys like Dwayne Casey, Benedict Mathurin, even up for a little bit, Rob Pelinka and Kareem Abdul-Jabbar were sitting a few seats in front of me, which was awesome.
That's
There was
amazing.
just a mix of players. Scoot Henderson's family was sitting in front of me. I talked with his father for about 3, 4 minutes. Dwayne Casey was very nice as well. Benedict Mathurin was an asshole, but that doesn't matter. And
You
I
wanna
also,
tell the story?
yeah. So Benedict was sitting literally 2 seats or 2 rows in front of me, and I was right behind him. And I noticed it right away. I said, "Oh, Mr. Ma I was super nice, respectful. I said, Mr. Mathurin, do you mind if I get a photo?"
Mr.
And
Mather is crazy.
dude, like, you
Yeah.
gotta respect the guys,
Yeah,
like I
that is
respect
very
I
respectful.
call
Yeah.
them by their last name. I
Yeah,
ran the
yeah.
guys, like I surrounded the Jose Alvarado, Obi Toppin. I said Mr. Alvarado, I'm being real respectful of these guys, because
Yeah.
that's how you get the photos. You can't just go up to them and call them by their nickname, like they don't know you. But
Yeah,
I asked
true.
him, and I didn't ask him during gameplay. I asked him during a timeout, and he was just like, yeah, just wait, until the game's over. And it was the fourth quarter. I was like, all right, that's no problem. So game's over. I say, Mr. Mathurin, can I get that photo now? And he looks back at me dead in the eye, gets up and walks away. The audacity of this man. He just looked into my eyes. He looked into my
Hunter,
eyes and told me, get out.
this is your villain origin story. You're gonna
I
end up
know.
becoming an NBA coach against Benedict Mathurin, and it's gonna come full circle.
Bro, I have a vendetta against Benedict Mathurin. If I see you again, Mr. Mathurin, actually, I'm not gonna even call you Mr. Mathurin. Your new name is Benny. I'm calling you Benny from now on.
Benny,
But
wow.
anyway, it's not that big of a deal. It happens. Some players don't want photos. I get it.
Yeah.
But I will say, looking at some of these guys, Scoot Henderson, easily the most NBA ready body. It's like just like, people talk about it, but he has the body. And not only that, he was absolutely the nicest player, like to the kids, to the fans. He literally went out of his way to sign easily 50 people's stuff. Like, there were kids
Wow.
crowding the rows, like security guards stopping people from getting down. And he was like, no, let me take the photos with these guys. Let me sign their stuff. He was went out of his way. Wembanyama didn't do it, but I think also they didn't do let Wembanyama do it for security reasons. It was already too much hype, just him being there. I feel like
Right.
Scoot didn't have that same pull, which was surprising to me. But yeah, I thought Scoot Henderson showed probably that he was the most NBA ready from a physical standpoint, but also from a media standpoint, which surprised me, which was very nice. But just overall summer league experience, it's always a good time to be there. And we can move on to the next segment because this is going to be a long podcast. So I could ramble about this for a long
Sure,
time, but
wait.
I don't want to
Let's talk
take up too
about
much
like
time.
some of the stuff we've seen from Summer League. I mean, I guess that we should start with the biggest story, which is Victor Wembanyama's debut in Summer League, right? We're seeing him on the court for the first time. What did you see? Where you were at that game, you saw him play in person. I mean, what did you take away from that?
Yeah, I think there were a lot of immediate highlights. I think a lot of people don't give him credit. He didn't fill up the stat sheet. He even admitted it himself. He was like, "I don't really know what I was doing out there. I was kind of lost." But I think there's also a few other factors that go into that. A, it's Summer League. Summer League is only a taste of what these players can do. They're not trying to get injured out there. And most of these guys that are on these rosters are trying to get contracts, trying to get signed to teams. And guys who have that security already, like a Scoot, a Victor Wembanyama, they're not trying to put their all out there, and they're also trying to set their teammates up for success and trying to get their teammates on rosters. So part of it, I think, for one, Victor Wembanyama wasn't being aggressive because he wanted to get his teammates involved. And also on that note, he's a very underrated passer. Like, especially for a big man, I did not realize how much of a bag he had as far as passing goes. He was making the right play every single possession down the court. And there was so much pressure on him. The entire crowd, every time he got the ball, was yelling, "Shoot it, shoot it." He did not. He made the right move every single possession, every single play, which shows his humility as a player, which I really love to see. I think people look at the negatives. He shot 2 for 13 from the field. He had a lot of turnovers. He was falling over a lot. But I think a lot of those things are, for one, players were pulling the chair on him a lot. I think that's something he needs to get used to, that's not going to be an option for him. And he dribbles the ball pretty high. So a lot of these smaller guys were stealing it pretty easily. Those are two very fixable things. And I think people weren't really looking at the intangibles. Like, he had five blocks. Like, that, you can't teach someone to have five blocks. And it didn't feel like he even had five blocks. It felt like he was having, maybe three, four blocks, maybe three blocks, but he just played, exceeded expectations on defense. His finishing wasn't great. I was surprised by that. But the shot's also going to come around. So, like, the biggest things for me were the passing is so much better than people talk about. He can handle the ball really well. And I mean, he was just an overall humble and guy with the team aspect. Like, he was very team minded.
Yeah, I mean, I agree. I'm maybe a little bit less optimistic about Wembanyama. I mean, just the more I think about him, the more red flags sort of glare up. And this is even before I saw him play and hit the court at Summer League. I'm first of all, and I know we talked about this during the draft, but like the health concerns and just like his longevity in this league at 7'3" is always going to be a legitimate concern. And it's very rare that we see guys like that have really long successful careers. Yao Ming's career was cut short, Porzingis injured, and guys of that stature. But yeah, I don't know. Like he defensively, we always knew he was going to be really good. I mean, he just like the blocks just come to him, and he just knows how to position himself well. I think the playmaking was a good surprise there. I don't think anybody really expected him to have that kind of vision and to be able to make those kinds of passes. I was really impressed. The shots were not falling for him. I'm sure they will at some point, but I don't know if he's going to ever be a very efficient shooter. I mean, even in France, right? It's a completely different game. He was a below average 3-point shooter, right? And his shot selection was questionable. So these are real concerns that I have. I know it is Summer League, and I'm not like straight up condemning him to be a bust or saying he's not going to be good. But it does really like highlight or accentuate already pre-existing concerns I had about Victor. But yeah, I mean, we can't read too much into one game, so we'll just leave it at that. Some of the other
I'd
guys we
add
could
one
briefly.
thing. Sorry, I
Yeah.
just want to add one thing to that. Like, the one thing that did jump out to me as a red flag seeing him in person is the way he throws his body around is very reminiscent of Anthony Davis, which is not a good thing at that size. He was
Yeah.
constantly on the floor, constantly diving, constantly jumping, which is you love to see that as a player, but at that size, in that small of a frame, that can lead to injuries very easily. There was one play where it was kind of scary. He looked like he could have turned his ankle, but he fell okay. But like, if that he is anything like Anthony Davis in that sense, he's going to have some major issues because he's 7 inches taller than Anthony Davis.
Yeah, and I
So.
mean, there even were some plays where it was like you could think that maybe the pressure was kind of getting to him. I mean, there was a play where he went up for a dunk and he missed the dunk at that height. Like he was basically eye level with the rim and missed it. So, I mean, there's a lot of pressure on the kid. He's 19 years old. I mean, both of us are older than Victor Wembanyama. So, like, we got to cut him a lot of slack and give him a lot of room to grow. But yeah, I mean, I think that the media is going way too far with this hype cycle and blowing it way out of proportion. I know you weren't able to catch the broadcast, but every single second of that game, they were talking about him in some way, shape, or form. And I think that's just like not healthy for someone to receive that much attention, and also not fair to the other nine players on the court. So I think that's enough of Victor for now. We'll be talking about him, I'm sure, for a long time. But let's just briefly give a couple sentences about some of the other guys we were able to see. Brandon Miller was also at that game. So what did you see from him?
Yeah, I thought he was pretty not quiet because he had put up a great stat line. That was his easily his best game so far in the Summer League. But I describe it as a quiet night, like in general. Like he just didn't really feel his presence on the floor compared to some of the other players. Like obviously everyone was focused on Victor Wembanyama. Like that was just how it was. So maybe that played into it a little bit. But I thought Brandon Miller had a solid game. He had 11 rebounds, 16 points on decent efficiency. Low turnovers in that game, and I think that was the game where you saw the most flashes of what Charlotte saw. He was attacking the rim really well, bringing up the ball. He has a lot of size. He's a little on the skinnier end, but he still has an NBA body. I just thought, like, I was like, okay, I can see where Charlotte's coming from, but this guy definitely should not have been drafted over Scoot. Like, that was my thought process.
I agree. I mean, the efficiency concerns are still there. I mean, he's been fouling a ton in Summer League. Those are, and I don't know. I'm just like, the more I watched him, the less I became enthusiastic about him, even in that game. Like, he didn't have a strong presence, as you were saying. I don't think that his impact was really felt. So, I mean, it is just Summer League. So, everything we're saying about these rookies, like, we got to just take it all with a big grain of salt. But yeah, like from what we saw from Scoot as well, I know he got hurt in that game that he played and probably not going to see him very much in the Summer League, but he looked to be everything we thought he was, hyper athletic, just a really creative and terrific finisher, very NBA ready, as you were saying. Like, this
His
guy
shot was
is,
falling great.
yeah, I mean, even the shot was falling. That's like a plus, because that's not what really you drafted him for. So excited to see that. And similar injury kind of story with Amen Thompson, but from the glimpses that we did see of him, he looked to be very promising and just kind of fitting into that mold of those oversized point guards. And I think that that's a recipe for success in the modern NBA.
I would agree. If I were to put money on it right now in Vegas odds, I'd have Scoot easily as my rookie of the year. And I think now is a great time to buy in on that. Because just watching him, especially with this whole Damian Lillard situation, which we're going to talk about, he's going to have the ball in his hands at all times. And he looked dominant. Obviously, it's Summer League, but even in the NBA, the way he was moving, he was so quick, so crafty around the rim. He just would jump up and finish in any single way possible. Like that was almost reminiscent of Kyrie Irving finishing. Like it was that good. I mean, he was doing some reverse layups where it was, like a reverse jelly between two players. I was like, whoa, like this is some serious stuff. Very few guys in the NBA can do this.
Yeah, no, I honestly agree with you. I think as of right now, if I was a betting man, the best bet for rookie of the year would be Scoot. I think it's the safest pick. Victor is still a bit of a wild card, bit of an X factor, but yeah, we can keep talking about that as the summer league progresses. But for now, we have a whole lot to talk about with free agency. Basically every team has been making moves. I guess that we should first start. We're kind of going to go in alphabetical order, but this also happens to be the biggest story, and that's starting with the Portland Trail Blazers, because Damian Lillard finally requested a trade. I know we were talking about this before, and I was actually rewatching the episode. I said that he wasn't going to be in a Portland Trail Blazer uniform to start the season, and you said he would.
And I said
So,
he would.
yeah,
Yes, it's
we're if we're keeping score, I think that puts me at like maybe like four in terms of points, in terms of predictions, and you at maybe like 34, so I'm catching up to you, man. I'm catching up. But yeah, I mean, let's just talk about this trade right here. Like, Damian Lillard requests a trade. He wants to play in Miami alongside Jimmy Butler, Bam Adebayo. What are your thoughts, man? Like, this was this a big surprise for you? And how are you feeling about it right now?
Yeah, I mean, look, we've been talking about it for so long. The only reason I would say like I'm surprised is because it's been so many years of the same continual thing. But you know, at the end of the day, I want what's best for Damian Lillard, and I think this is best for the NBA that he's on the contending team. So look, I'm not too mad at it. I will say the one thing about this whole situation that kind of makes me a little bit sour towards Damian Lillard is it's not just that he wants to get out of Portland. It's a complete 180. And he's like, okay, I'm only going to Miami. Sure, you can tell your team, I only want to be on the contender, but to tell them you only want to go to one specific destination that is a contender and then give them no wiggle room to work with, especially when a team doesn't have good pieces to shape your team. Like, look, Miami can offer Duncan Robinson and Tyler Hero. Those guys do not fit whatsoever on the Blazers. The Blazers already have Shaedon Sharpe, they already have Anfernee Simons, and they already have Scoot Henderson. They have their guards. They need forwards, they need centers, they need young pieces like that. The Heat cannot offer any of those types of players. And also the picks that they would receive from the Miami Heat would be picks very far into the future, and they probably wouldn't be very good picks because Miami is a good team. So I think that Damian Lillard's being a little bit too sour about the situation because look, the Celtics are interested in him. If the Celtics were to offer Jaylen Brown for Damian Lillard and like a pick, I would, if I'm Damian Lillard, I give my organization the respect to be able to trade me to a team that was literally just 2 years ago in the NBA Finals. You know, it's a good team that probably the championship favorite if they were to receive Damian Lillard. And they get a good package in return with a young star who fits their roster construction, and they don't get screwed over. I think there's a little balance that needs to happen, and I don't think Damian Lillard is giving them the opportunity.
Yeah, in terms of like what's best for the Blazers, I think, yeah, you do have to kind of leverage like we're losing our star, but you know, we do want to get the best package in return. And I'll agree, like if it's a one-to-one deal, Miami doesn't offer the best package. That's why, you know, the Brooklyn Nets have been floated as a third team that could be added in this deal. I think though that like, you know, people are saying that Damian Lillard or the Blazers owe nothing to Damian Lillard because, you know, it's an organization, it's cutthroat, you have to do what's best for you, whether you're a player, whether you're a team. But it's like, look, we talk so much about like, oh, Damian Lillard, he's loyal to the Portland Trailblazers. Like, we applaud that. Like, despite all this and despite how they never gave him a roster to contend with, I think the least you can do is at least just heed his wishes in wanting to go play for a specific team. You know, you can still get a good haul. It might not be the best necessarily, but like you can still get a lot of good pieces in return, especially if you include a third or fourth team in that deal. And I think that, look, it's the
I
least you
just
can
think,
do. Why, if this is the way you treat your star player that has been loyal to you for 11 years, right? Imagine what any other star free agent would think. Do you think they would ever want to come to Portland if this is the way that you're treating your
no
star?
star
Maybe
free
you send them
agent
to
is
someone
ever
who.
going to Portland. No star free agent is ever going to Portland. Tell me the last time a star free agent said, "Man, I want to be in Portland, Oregon. That sounds great." Never. It's never
You
happened.
would have to
That's
go
a homegrown,
far.
smaller market. No, never. Clyde Drexler was a draft pick. They've never had a star in their organization's history that came to their organization except for LaMarcus Aldridge.
I mean,
Like,
LaMarcus
that's
Aldridge,
it.
Scottie Pippen played there toward the end of his career. I mean, there's names you can. I'm just saying
Yeah, but Scottie.
the idea that a star player won't go to a smaller market is a bit absurd. Like, it's not out of the question. I'm just saying, you really got to like set a good precedent and treat your players with respect. And I'm saying that like you got to respect the fact that Dame played there for 11 years. And I think that you kind of owe it to him in a sense that you like accommodate what he wants. He gave you so
I
much.
think I disagree. I think you owe it to him to get him to a contender. I don't think you owe it to him because, like, look, I believe there's a balance of this. You're still an organization. You still want to do what's best. If you can make a three-team trade work where you don't have to take on Duncan Robinson and Tyler Hero, and you're able to get some maybe Brooklyn Nets players like a Cam Johnson, okay, I can see that world. But, like, if you're doing purely what's best for the organization, they're just doing a one-on-one trade with Brooklyn. And obviously they're not going to do that because they respect Dame. But if the Celtics call up and they say, "We have a great package for you," if I'm the front office of the Blazers, that's still a place that Dame Lillard could be happy because it's a contender. He shouldn't just be
Honestly,
like, "Oh, I only want
I
to go to
think the
Miami."
best deal, if I'm being honest, if I'm the Blazers, the best deal is with the Sixers. If they offer Tyrese Maxey, I would take that deal in a heartbeat. I think Tyrese Maxey
Oh
is the
yeah,
best possible
absolutely.
player you could get as a trade piece for Dame.
The problem is Tyrese Maxey's also part of like that. Then you have who are you dropping in that starting group? Because Shaedon Sharpe was been great in summer league. You have Anfernee Simons, you're obviously not going to drop. Then you also have Scotty, or sorry, not Scotty. You also have Scoot Henderson. So
Look, I
who
mean,
do
look,
you like
when
give
you're
that
in
pick?
a team that's in a rebuild, like you kind of throw fit out the window at a certain point. Like if you can get a guy like Tyrese Maxey, a certified future star player, like you take that deal all day, and then you work from there.
All right.
Yeah, so I guess
Well,
with
I think we
the
can move
Dame
on from the
thing,
next team.
yeah. Yeah, so I mean,
Actually, really
okay,
quick,
just
let's just. Oh, go
yeah,
ahead.
you want to go?
Yeah, I was just gonna say also just to add, but they retained Matisse Thybulle for 3 years, $33 million. That wasn't the offer they gave him. I think the Mavs gave him that offer, and then the Blazers retained his bird rights and decided to re-sign him. Just real quick, I think that's an, a fine move. You have to keep your young players and. This is a guy who has some defensive ability. He's young, and you have the money
Yeah.
to spend, so.
Good compliments, a bit of your more offensively minded players like Shaden, Scoot, and Simons, as you were talking about.
Lastly, the last thing about the Blazers, which is probably the biggest news aside from Damian Lillard, is that you signed Jeremy Grant on a 5-year, $160 million deal. At the time, they probably thought Damian Lillard was staying. But obviously, in hindsight, this looks like a very bad contract. Any really quick
Actually,
thoughts?
there's a bit of a misconception with that move. They didn't they like announced they agreed on that deal. Dame announced that they agreed on that deal, but it was verbal, right? That was kind of the agreement they came with. They could have gone back and not signed him. They instead went ahead and signed him anyway, even after Dame announced the trade. So this was a move the Blazers made, fully conscientious of the fact that Damian Lillard would probably no longer be on the team. So. With that being
That's even
said, I
worse.
think it's a bad move. I think it's obviously an overpay. And I think, I think you could have gotten for less. I don't think there's that big of a market out there for a guy like Jeremy Grant for 5 years, 160 mil.
All right. Do you want to move on to the next team?
Yeah, so I mean, the next team is the Milwaukee Bucks. So some of the moves they made were retaining Chris Middleton, 3 years, 102 mil. Keeping Brook Lopez, which was honestly surprising as there was a big market out there for him, 2 years, 48 mil. Actually getting Robin Lopez and Malik Beasley on 1 year deals, to sort of fill out the roster. What do you think of the moves the Bucks made?
Yeah, I mean, I think they just retained what they were expected to retain, and Chris Middleton extension is always going to be good. You want to keep that core together. Very, very good they were able to re-sign Brook Lopez. That was going to be rough without him. Just kind of a big void in that center spot, especially because he's a defensive player of the year candidate. That's going to keep the Bucks at a great defensive level. And then I guess with obviously Robin Lopez being there, it's probably just because Brook wanted them there. I guess maybe you'll play him some backup center minutes if you ever need it, but it's probably just more there as a moral support. And then Malik
Yeah.
Beasley, that's a guy who high volume 3-point shooter. Those are always valuable around the NBA. And look, if he's hitting a shot, you keep him in, and if he's not, you don't. It's not something you worry about too much. It's a good backup for like a Grayson Allen to come in and just light up the floor, maybe give you 7 3-pointers one night out of, half the regular season and. Could be beneficial, but there's no real risk there.
Yeah, feels like when they signed Wesley Matthews, former Laker guard that's probably going to start lighting it up in Milwaukee.
Exactly. From there, I think we can move on to the next team. We're just going to rapid fire a little bit. Chicago Bulls, they signed Nikola Vucevic to a 3-year, $60 million deal. They got Kobe White for also 3 years, $33 million. Javon Carter, they got, who was on the Milwaukee Bucks before that, for 3 years, $20 million. And they got Torrey Craig from the Suns on a 2-year, kind of vet man, like $5 million deal over there. And they also applied for the $5.2 million injured player exception because Lonzo Ball is expected to miss the entire season. So just
Yeah.
what are your thoughts on all of the
I think
moves?
that, okay, when I look at the Bulls, I see basically a dead man walking, right? I think that this team, it's one of those teams that kind of needs to blow it up. I don't think your core of Vucevic, LaVine, or DeMar is really going anywhere in the East. And especially losing Lonzo, that's a huge blow. So don't be surprised if this team ends up blowing it up. In terms of these specific moves thus far, I think they're all very team-friendly deals. No real overpays, like solid moves all around, filling out the roster, but just I think your core isn't strong enough to really compete in the East. It's never going to be bad enough to be a lottery team, but you're kind of stuck in that play-in purgatory. So yeah, I'm not a fan of the Bulls' direction as a whole, but these moves specifically are pretty good.
Yeah, I
With
call
that, we
them
can move
the
on.
new. Real
Oh
quick,
yeah,
I
go
just call
ahead.
them the new Wizards. I just
That is
call
a
them the
honestly
new
a good comparison.
Wizards of the NBA. Yeah,
Yeah,
but we can move
that's
on
a
to
good
the next team,
comparison.
like you were saying.
Yeah, so next team, Cleveland Cavaliers. They were able to re-sign Caris LeVert on a 2-year, 32 mil contract, pick up a couple new pieces in Max Strus, 4-year, 64 mil, George Niang from the Sixers, 3-year, 26 mil, and then Ty Jerome, who I believe was playing with the Warriors, 2 years, 4.6 mil.
Yeah, I think this is where you get a little bit into the overpays, especially when you're talking about Max Strus in a 4-year, $64 million deal. I think Caris LeVert's a fair contract, but especially with the way he played in the postseason, I think that might be a little bit questionable. But you kind of have to re-sign a bucket like that. But Max Strus is a guy who shot 31% from three in the NBA Finals. I mean, he is a guy who had a good 3-point shooting year, solid defender, played in a good system, but I think we always see this year after year, and it's really bad this year. I think we get inflated contracts for teams that performed well and guys that performed well on those teams. And Max Strus is definitely one of those guys. I mean, the Cavs, I like what they're building here. Like, they need a guy like that with some experience, some grit, can help with on the perimeter, give you some good defense to supplement, the poor defensive efforts that you had against the Knicks. But I think it's a lot of risk to be bringing him on for what, like $18 million a year, especially when that could go south very quickly if he proves to not be hitting that 3-point jumper. And maybe not that it was a fluke, but maybe Miami's system and just the culture kind of boosted his game. So I would just be concerned with that. But outside of that, I think Caris LeVert, solid sign. Ty Jerome's also a good sign, and Georges Niang is also another guy who can light it up.
Yeah, I agree. I think that, like I get a little skeptical too anytime I see these Miami sharpshooters getting the bag, just after the whole Duncan Robinson thing where basically just fell off a cliff. Or even a guy like Davis Bertans who, got a huge contract and just forgot how to shoot. So I'm always skeptical, but yeah, I like these moves from Cleveland overall.
Yeah. Moving on to the Celtics, we can just mention what they did, but they really haven't done anything. We talked about Kristaps already last pod. They added O'Shea Brissett and they added Dalino Banton. I don't know who that is, but yeah, he got two years for 4.2 million. Sorry, Dalino, or Delano. I didn't even say his name right. But it's okay. I don't know who that is. We can
Yeah.
move on to the next team. Let's just talk about the Clippers. They re-signed Russell Westbrook, and they also were able to retain Mason Plumlee. They signed Westbrook for 2 years, $8 million, which is very team friendly, considering that Russell Westbrook probably deserves in the $15 million to $20 million range based on what other players got. And then Mason
Totally.
Plumlee, solid backup big, get him for 1 year. And there's also rumors that they're still looking to maybe try and trade for like a James Harden, who's also on the trade market, and Damian Lillard as well.
Yeah,
So
I
what are
mean,
your
you
just
basically
immediate
summarized it.
thoughts?
Yeah, not too much to talk about with the Clippers here. I think, getting Russ on that deal is great, and he performed very well for you last season. So I like the fact that they're keeping him. It does seem like the Clippers are not done making moves, as you said. There's still a big market out there for James Harden, and they're in a prime position to land him. So, if I were to bet money on where Harden's going to land, I think LA is the destination. So, yeah, it seems like we're at a bit of an intermediary stage for the Clippers. But let's keep it moving. A lot of teams to get through. Let's talk about Memphis here. They re-signed Desmond Bane, or they gave him a max extension. actually 5 years, 205 mil, and then brought in Derrick Rose for a 2 year, $6.5 million deal. Thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, I think you have to give Desmond Bane that contract. You don't love the contract. Definitely a little bit of an overpay in some sense, but Desmond Bane was the one most consistent guy for you in the postseason. He's very consistent throughout the year. You know, him and Ja Morant are 1A, 1B, in my opinion, in the postseason, especially because Desmond Bane's the more level-headed guy. You got to pay him, smaller market. But moving on to Derrick Rose, I really do love this. People have been talking about this for a long time. Pairing Ja Morant with a mentor in Derrick Rose, a guy who is essentially who he modeled his game after. And I love the new nickname, Guns and Roses. I mean, it's just a beautiful name for Ja Morant and Derrick Rose. It's actually so fire. And I think Derrick Rose has a lot he can teach Ja Morant, not just as a mentor on the court, but off the court. I think if anybody can reach out to Ja Morant and tell him what he's doing wrong, it's, you know, his role model. So I think this is a very good signing for them. And I think Derrick Rose probably wants to give him that knowledge, wants to help him out, wants to make sure he has a good career and doesn't sort of fall into the hole that Derrick Rose fell in and, you know, become depressed and have a lot of issues. You know, I think Derrick Rose is definitely a kind-hearted man who wants to help a young man flourish and find the right path. So just, I think all around great job from Memphis.
Yeah, I think that, you know, these are really good moves. I'm a fan of the Desmond Bane extension. I think he's gotten better every year, and his scoring is really consistent. Also, a very underrated defender, in my opinion. So I like that move a lot. Let's move on and talk about Atlanta. Not much to talk about here. They didn't sign anybody as of yet, but they did trade John Collins finally, and it's for, in my opinion, a very underwhelming package of Rudy Gay and a future second from the Jazz. You have any thoughts on this?
Yeah, yes, and they're also trading away Rudy Gay, so they literally just got a second round pick. But I don't they messed up so bad. They were looking to trade John Collins for years, and they were getting great value out of him. They could have gotten some really good pieces, and they just held him too long. His value dipped, and I think he'll be great for the Jazz. So very happy for the Jazz. I think him and Lowry are going to be a great front court together, especially they complement each other's play styles very well. And I think he's very happy to be out of that Hawks organization. I think there was a lot of issues with Trae Young's personality clashing with Nate McMillan earlier in the season, and I also think that he felt unwanted. So I think this is just all around the L's from the Hawks, but good for John Collins.
Agreed, agreed.
Yeah,
Um,
so
let's
we
keep it
can move on
pushing
to the
here.
next team, the Heat. Yeah, the Heat. They signed Josh Richardson for 2 years, $6 million. Kevin Love, they re-signed him on two, for 2 years, $7.6 million. They're able to also add Thomas Bryant for 2 years, $5.4 million, and Orlando Robinson. I believe he's a rookie, or
I
maybe
don't
he's not a
know,
rookie,
but
but he's a
regardless.
second year guy. But yeah, 1.8 mil, and they also have Jaime Jaquez, who's definitely going to be inserted into their lineup from the draft. And also keep in mind they're most likely going to get Damian Lillard.
Yeah, so I think the
So,
Heat are in
Amelia,
a really
thoughts on
good
all their
position this
moves?
offseason. Yeah, I think the Heat are in a really good position this offseason. Definitely one of the better teams to come out of this. Obviously, you know, the big storyline is them potentially landing Damian Lillard, which would be the cream of the crop. I think they would have the best big three in the league with that addition. I think Dame, Jimmy, and Bam, with all things considered, scoring, defense, just general fit, chemistry, I think that would be a prime fit. I actually think that some of the moves they made are have been kind of underrated, not talked about. Jay Rich, for only 6 mil, 2 years, is very good. I think he's still a very productive shooting guard. He's coming back to the team that drafted him. I like that fit right there, especially after you lost guys like Max Strus, and guys like that who provide a lot of scoring. And then Thomas Bryant, you know, what did Miami really lack? It was size. And you're getting a good offensive center in Thomas Bryant. He's not going to do much for you in terms of defense, but that's why you have Bam Adebayo there. So I do like these moves. I think Miami's playing it really well. And then obviously keeping Kevin Love. He was a big contributor in the playoffs. So good moves for Miami. Let's just keep it moving because there's a lot of teams in the association. Let's talk about Charlotte, right? So they extended LaMelo Ball, gave him the 5-year max, 260 mil. And they actually brought in Miles Bridges. He's back on a 1 year, $8 million deal. I guess Bridges is the big story here, right?
Yeah, I mean, you have to. I think that's a great contract for his level of play. This is a guy who was arguably going to get a max contract if he had not acted so poorly in his personal life. So, as far as this goes from a signing perspective, a great contract for him, and you have to give LaMelo Ball the max. So, I mean, nothing great for the Hornets as far as like just general NBA, but it's the Hornets. They kind of got to do what they got to do and pay their guys.
Yeah, definitely.
So from there, I think we can kind of just move on to the next team in the Utah Jazz. We talked about it already, but they got John Collins in that trade, and they also re-signed Jordan Clarkson on a 3-year, $65 million deal. Any thoughts on that?
I mean, good retaining Jordan Clarkson, bringing John Collins. I really like their front court. I think they have one of the best young cores in the team. They're doing it right over there in Utah. Just keep it moving.
Absolutely. So next is the Kings, if you want to talk about them.
Sure, yeah. Kings, they extended Sabonis actually on a team-friendly deal. Sabonis didn't get all the money possible. On a 5-year, $217 million contract. Got Harrison Barnes back, 3-year, $54 million. Brought back Trey Lyles and Alex Len. So, what do you think of these moves?
Yeah, I really think Sabonis, you have to do what you have to do, and he showed he's one of the best power forwards in the league, very winning player. Harrison Barnes, I think that contract is questionable, especially because he's shown he sucks in the postseason, especially in game sevens. He's historically been like that through his career. I think Trey Lyles, solid signing. I think he's a little underrated. And then Alex Len's kind of just bounced around the NBA, and sure, he could be a decent backup big man. But, decent signings for the Kings. I don't think they did anything too amazing, though.
Totally, totally.
Yeah, moving on to the next team. Let's talk about the New York Knicks. They brought on a guy who I think is going to be great for them, Dante DiVincenzo, for 4 years, $50 million, from the Golden State Warriors. What do you think of this move?
Yeah, I mean, reuniting the Villanova boys, right? Jalen Brunson and Josh Hart, they're all back together playing in New York. I like this move a lot. I think Dante brings a lot of grit. He's a very winning player. We've seen that in Milwaukee and Golden State. He's a good shooter too, good finisher. I think he's going to fit this sort of tough Knicks culture that's being built there. He kind of fits alongside those guys, Josh Hart and Jalen Brunson. They all kind of play in a very similar manner. So I'm a fan of this move. New York, they had a great season last year, and this is just sort of adding more icing to the cake. So I like this move a lot. We can keep it going to talk about the Lakers, who made a lot of moves this offseason. I'm sure you're well aware of all of these, but let's just go down the
Yes.
list. They kept Austin Reaves on a good deal, 4 years, 56 mil. Brought back Rui Hachimura, 3 years, 51 mil. Brought back D'Angelo Russell, 2 years, 37 mil. They brought in Gabe Vincent from Miami, 3 years, 33 million on the mid-level exception. And then they brought in Torian Prince on the vet min, brought in Cam Reddish, 2 year, 5 mil. And then Jackson Hayes, 2 year, 4.6 mil. So, thoughts on the Laker moves? I know we could talk about it all podcasts, but.
I'll give a real quick overview. I really love this Austin Reaves deal. He decided not to even take the chance. He just signed for what the max the Lakers could give him for it. When that's an insane deal, considering you're going to be having this guy in his prime, and he's a guy who probably deserves to be paid $20 to $25 million a year, and you're getting him for about $14 million a year. Rui Hachimura, this is a guy. Maybe you're taking a little bit more of a risk on this contract. What we saw against the Grizzlies, if he's that player, this is an incredible deal. But you also have to consider that was just one postseason. Is he that guy he was in the Wizards? Is he that guy he was against, the Denver Nuggets? But if he's knocking down that three ball at the rate he was knocking it down in the postseason, and if he's playing solid defense, giving you good size, that's a great contract. D'Angelo Russell, solid contract. I think probably one of the better contracts that the Lakers got, especially considering how much money other guys are signing for around the league. I think the Lakers just utilized their money well. Gabe Vincent was the one guy from the Heat I feel didn't get overpaid. I think That's a pretty safe bet. $11 million a year for a guy who shoots the three the solid rate, plays good defense, and gives you some grit. Probably going to fill that Dennis Schroeder role. Torian Prince, another guy who can shoot the three. Love that contract. Just can give you some solid backup 4 minutes. Cam Reddish is another guy who I think you take pretty much no risk on giving him this small contract, but can have some potential upside. And Jackson Hayes, you need to sign a center, and there weren't too many available. So I like this is also a risky play, but I think it could be solid. The Lakers, I think, honestly, probably had the best offseason of any team. And man, that was a lot to get through for one team. But you know, can't stay on any team for too long. So I think we'll move on from there to the Orlando Magic, who they actually got Joe Ingles in a 2-year, $22 million contract, and re-signed Mo Wagner 2 years, $16 million, and they let go of Bol Bol. So what are your
Yeah, I
thoughts on that?
mean, I don't really know about this Joe Ingles signing. Like, it kind of puzzles me. I guess to just bring in a bit of, veteran play, the guys to, grow, like, teach some tricks of the trade to the young core and grow alongside them. I like retaining Mo Wagner to play alongside his brother Franz. Really not much here. We can keep moving.
So I guess I'll talk about the Dallas Mavericks, who signed Kyrie Irving for 3 years, $126 million. They retained Dwight Powell, 3 years, $12 million. Seth Curry, they bring him back after being there in the 2021 for 2 years, $9.2 million. And they also add Dante Exum, who was in the Australian League. He was a guy who was a lottery pick back probably in like 2015, 2016. And they bring him on for 1 year, 2.7 mil, a defensive specialist. What are your thoughts on this team?
Yeah, I mean, obviously the big story here is retaining Kyrie Irving on a pretty good deal too. Not an exorbitant overpay. I think, Mark Cuban really believes in this Doncic Irving pairing. So hopefully that ends up working out this time around. Bringing back Dwight Powell, I thought
Oh,
he was
sorry.
pretty good for them. Yeah,
I
go
just
ahead.
wanted to add also Grant Williams was also added to the Mavs in the three-team
Right.
trade where the Spurs got Reggie Bullock and the Celtics got 2 seconds.
Yeah,
So
wait,
just if you could
good.
also
Yeah.
add on that.
Yeah, so I think that, with that move especially, like, the Mavs are trying to fill their biggest deficiency, which was their defense, and Grant Williams is going to provide a lot of that. And then adding more shooting around the perimeter with Seth Curry, Grant Williams is going to provide some of that as well. And then I guess bringing in Dante Exum, they believe in his guard and perimeter defense, even though he has been out of the league for a little bit now. So interesting moves. I think, retaining Kyrie Irving is ultimately a success, that you didn't just lose him for nothing. So, I honestly thought that the Mavs have had pretty good off season. So yeah, that's pretty much it. We can move on to talk about Brooklyn. They held on to Cam Johnson, got him on a 4-year, $108 million extension, brought in Dennis Smith Jr. and Lonnie Walker on some pretty cheap deals. What do you think?
Yeah, I mean, I think you have to extend Cam Johnson. He played really well for you in the previous season. Dennis Smith Jr. is also another low risk one. You're a young team, still makes sense. And I think Lonnie Walker is honestly a steal of a deal. I'm surprised they didn't sign him for longer, especially after the postseason he had, playing so well against the Warriors. Playing pretty solid in the regular season for the Lakers. Just kind of losing minutes due to roster construction. I think this is going to be a really good move for the Nets, especially a team with not much guards. And this is a very athletic team with Mikal Bridges, Cam Johnson, Lonnie Walker. I think they're going to do a lot of good things. And I think people are really going to see who Lonnie Walker is now that he might be able to even get into the starting lineup. So I think from there, we can move on to talking about the Nuggets, who signed Reggie Jackson or retain him for 2 years, $10 million. Also retain DeAndre Jordan for a year, 1 year, $3.2 million, and add Justin Holiday for 1 year, $3.2 million as well. Not too many big moves, but if you want to talk about those real quick, go ahead.
Yeah, I mean, the Nuggets, I think the biggest story with them is a loss. They lost Bruce Brown, weren't able to hold on to him, and he was an integral piece of that championship team. And I guess bringing back Reggie and DeAndre is just sort of like filling out the bench. And then I'm not a fan of Justin Holiday. I think he's honestly kind of like one of the Nepo babies of the NBA. Like, because his brother Drew is good, like, maybe word of mouth gets around that, he should be in the league. But yeah, I think the Nuggets have had a pretty tough offseason. I don't think it's been very successful for them. So yeah, honestly, it is a bit tough. Champion teams often do get worse in the offseason because they're not able to retain all the pieces. And I think we're just seeing one of those stories right here. With that, let's keep going. Let's talk about Indiana. They actually got Bruce Brown on a 2-year, $45 million contract, and then they extended Tyrese Halliburton on a 5-year, 260 max extension.
Yeah, I think Tyrese is the new Chris Paul of the NBA. You gotta extend him. He's, the new wave point guard, really just a all around amazing talent who's only gonna grow. So this is, yes, a massive contract, but you gotta pay him. He's gonna be the cornerstone of your franchise for years to come. And then Bruce Brown is a massive overpay. I just think that's another kind of the same situation as like those Miami Heat contracts where it's like coming off that championship. You're feeling yourself a little bit. People are talking about you around the league, and you just get that bag. And yes, he was an integral piece. He is a gritty player. He is a really good shooter, and can make some good plays down the stretch of the game. But getting him for $22.5 million a year is a massive overpay. So I think he's more of that kind of like $15 million range. So I wouldn't, be too upset from the Pacers, but you pay them a lot.
Yeah.
So from there, I think we can move on to talk. Oh, go ahead if you have any thoughts.
I was just going to say, yeah, this is just one of those classic cases where, championship team artificially inflates a player. I think that Pacers are going to regret this deal. Bruce Brown is not worth $22 million a year. I think it was just a bit of an
Yeah.
overpay.
I think Jokic also has that same kind of Bron effect where guys he plays with just look better than they are in some ways as well. So I think
Definitely.
Pacers might end up regretting that. But maybe Tyrese can make him look good. Next, we have the Pelicans, who extend Herb Jones on a 4-year, $54 million deal and add Cody Zeller on a 1-year, $3.2 million deal. What are your thoughts?
I love the Herb extension. I think, he's one of the bright defensive players in this league, and he really fits with this core. The big question with New Orleans is obviously surrounding Zion Williamson. What is he going to look like next season? Is he going to be available? And obviously, all the off the court drama doesn't help. So, not too much happening in New Orleans this offseason. It's just a matter of getting all the pieces to coalesce and actually play together on the court. So we can move on. Detroit really made no moves this offseason. I guess they're just focusing on their young core, Cade Cunningham, Jaden Ivey, Jalen Duren, those guys. I guess the coaching move was a move, but we already talked about that. And then we can move on to talk about the Raptors, who extended Jakob Poeltl 4 years, 80 mil. I guess they extended him, sorry. They brought in Dennis Schroeder and then Jalen McDaniels. Dennis Schroeder on a 2-year, $26 million deal. Jalen McDaniels, not Jaden McDaniels, on a 2-year, $10 million deal. What do you think?
So I think Jakob Poeltl maybe a little bit of an overpay, but he's a really solid NBA center, and guys were just getting bags this year. So this is kind of what you have to throw out if you want to retain him. Dennis Schroeder, I think that's also a very solid deal after losing Fred VanVleet. I think that just, this is kind of what level of pay he should be getting in the NBA. He's a solid, scrappy player. And then Jalen McDaniels, I really don't know too much about. So probably an okay contract. My one question with the Raptors is I think they're kind of in that same purgatory as the Bulls. You're never going to be like bad enough to be a lottery team. You're never going to be good enough to get past the play-in or the first round. So I'm just kind of questioning where they're at, especially losing VanVleet. Are they going to blow it up as well and get rid of Siakam, especially with Scottie Barnes and their young core? But I think we can move on to the next team unless you have any comments to add.
No, sorry, I was saying I
All
was not
right,
in my head
so I
now.
guess we'll. Okay, sorry. I guess we'll move on to the Houston Rockets then, and they are the ones who actually signed Fred VanVleet for 3 years, $130 million. Dylan Brooks, 4 years, $80 million as well, and then Jock Landale for 4 years, $32 million. Jeff Green for 1 year, $6 million, and I believe they also made one more move, which was Oh no, sorry. I covered all those moves. Never mind. They didn't make any more moves than that. But what are your thoughts on this Rockets team? And
Yeah.
also just keep in mind that they had to hit the salary floor.
Yeah, thank God that, thank God that they didn't make any more moves, because this has been a bit of a free agency disaster class, in my opinion, in Houston. I think that these are way too inflated deals for the guys you're bringing in, and they also don't make sense with the sort of personnel that you have. I think that Fred VanVleet, 3 year, 130 mil is crazy for a guy who's inefficient, who's a bit undersized, who's not the same defender that he used to be. I don't really like his fit alongside all your promising guards. You're basically sending your first round draft pick to the bench, Amen Thompson. So I'm not really sure the logic in that. And then I mean, how do you watch the postseason that Dylan Brooks just had and then give him a 4 year, $80 million contract? I don't understand. I don't think Dylan Brooks is necessarily a player that's like out of the league kind of bad, but like, he did just have a really poor showing, and he does cause a lot of drama. And I think the last thing you need with a really young team is a guy who's a bit of a fire starter, who's going to cause a lot of drama and might be a bit harmful to the locker room environment. I think also Jock Landale, like, I kind of liked him as a backup in Phoenix, but come on, 4 year, $32 million, that's a bit of an overpay. I get that they had a lot of money to spend, but I think that it's better to be more economical and conservative with your money than to just give anybody and everybody a big deal. So I'm not a fan of what Houston did. The only saving grace is that Fred VanVleet's deal is on a player option for that last year. So if it's not working, they can just let him walk. But yeah, I really didn't like what Houston did. I guess we can move on to talk about the 76ers, whose only real notable move besides, I guess, like losing some pieces here and there was bringing in Patrick Beverley on a 1 year deal.
Yeah, I mean, Patrick Beverley, a fine veteran. He's going to provide some grit. And he could give you some solid minutes, maybe hit a three here or there. That which is fine, as a signing. I think they really do need to find a trade for Harden. You can't really tell what this team is yet, and I really hope they get that in before training camp, because they're also possibly looking at sitting on Harden. They're thinking maybe they can mend that relationship, which maybe they can. I'm not there, but at this point, there's been so much drama, and James Harden's a guy who's requested so many trades in his career that you don't really want to take a chance on the guy with that, like, questions like that, even if he was really good for your team, especially when we saw in the postseason that him and Embiid kind of fell apart a little bit, especially with Embiid being injured. But I think we can move on to the Spurs, who made a few moves. They add Trey Jones on a 2-year, $20 million deal. Add they Julian Champagne, who's from or not J Julian, sorry. He was on a two-way with them, and he's getting a 4-year, $12 million deal. And Sandro Mamuleshevsky Vuyu on a 1-year, $1.8 million deal. But just really quickly, I know you don't know too much about these guys, but I just want to talk about Julian Champagne. He has looked like easily the best player on the Spurs roster during summer league. He dropped a 30-point bomb against the Lakers. He dropped, I believe it was like 20-something points against the Hornets, and he's just a walking bucket. This is a guy who could honestly be, a starting guard for them. Like, I think he's really that level of talent, and to get him on this deal, I think is very solid. But I think from there, unless you have any more comments about the Spurs, we can just move on to the next team. Okay, moving on to the Suns. We've got Eric Gordon, 2 years, $6.5 million. Drew Eubanks, 2 years, $5 million. Got Damian Lee, 2 years, $5.3 million. Kata Bates-Diop, 2 years, $5 million. Chimezie Metu, 1 year, $2.5 million. Josh Okogie, 1 year, $2.3 million. And Yuta Watanabe, 1 year, $2.3 million. This is another team like the Lakers that made a ton of moves, got a ton of guys. But just what are your thoughts on these moves and additions to this big three that they're going to have in Phoenix?
Yeah, I mean, Phoenix had to fill out their roster, right? That was like the big concern after they brought in Bradley Beal. And I think they've done a moderately okay job of doing so. I think there's some quality pieces here. I think Eric Gordon, as just a pure bucket getter, can still sort of fill up the stat sheet in that regard, even though he is pretty old at this point and doesn't really give you much at all on defense. Same with Yuta Watanabe. I mean, he's just a very efficient shooter. We saw how him and KD could play well together in Brooklyn. And then the rest of these guys are just sort of like fringe NBA players, you know, like guys who made it might have been even out of the league. I don't know where Cade Abates-Diop has been, but he's back. Chimezie Metu, I know he had some run with the Kings, but you know, these are not like really high profile names. It's just guys that sort of fill out the roster and do the best you can. But all things being considered, I think that the Suns did find some quality pieces there. And yeah, I think that it's just a matter of making sure they can keep the team afloat when the stars go to rest. Yeah, we can keep them moving. Honestly, I think we could just skip over the Thunder as well. They signed a guy, Jack White, 2 year, 4 mil. Never heard of this guy in my life, so we can keep him moving to the Timberwolves, where they gave Anthony Edwards the max extension. And I mean, that's just crazy. If I could just say the 2020 draft class getting their bags this offseason, Anthony Edwards, Tyrese Halliburton, and LaMelo Ball all getting max deals. Notable exception
Desmond
there,
Bane as
James
well.
Wall. Was he in the 2020 class?
I believe so.
Interesting. Well,
I believe Desmond Bane was a 2020 pick.
I thought he was in the league a little bit earlier than that. Oh, he was. Yeah, you're right. Sorry, my bad. But anyways, yeah, I just want to mention that. But yeah, so the Timberwolves extended Anthony Edwards on a max deal, brought in Naz Reid, or sorry, they kept Naz Reid 3 years, $41 million. Brought in Shake Milton from the Sixers, Troy Brown Jr. from the Lakers, and Nickeil Alexander-Walker from New Orleans. So, yeah, what do you think of these moves?
Yeah, I mean, I think they really did a pretty good job. Shake Milton is a pretty solid NBA player, 3-point shooter. Troy Brown's another guy who had a great season with the Lakers, kind of revived his career a little bit in the spotlight with LeBron. You know, solid 3-point shooting, played some good defense. Anthony Edwards, you got to give him that deal. You know, he's absolutely worth it. Naz Reid is another guy who you were able to retain. This is a, in my opinion, a little bit of an overpay. And I think this is what kind of started the route of overpays in the NBA because he was the first contract to sign in this offseason. You know, that's a big bag for this guy, but you know, he's a sought after talent being a center who can shoot the three ball. And then Nickeil Alexander-Walker is a, you know, a lengthy defensive player. So I think the Timberwolves did solid. I mean, they got a bunch of guys. They got some good guards, some defensive minded players. I don't think they're moving anywhere. Like, you know, this Rudy Gobert cat thing probably is never going to work out. But, you know, they're doing the best they can to make it work. Moving on to the next team, the Golden State Warriors, they are able to retain Draymond Green on a 4-year, $100 million deal. And they also had Corey Joseph on a 1-year, $3.2 million deal. Unfortunately, they did lose a lot of guys, but I'll let you get to that.
Yeah, I mean, the Warriors, like, the big notable loss is Jordan Poole. And I think that, you know, we're going to be seeing a different look Warriors next year with the addition of Chris Paul. And I'm excited to, I'm not excited, I'm interested. I'm intrigued to see how Chris Paul, Steph Curry, and Klay Thompson are going to fit together. I honestly don't think it's going to work that well. I think the Warriors are going to have a lot of struggles next year. And I think, you know, you're keeping Draymond, you're kind of betting on him over Poole, because at a certain point it felt like you had to go in one direction or the other. I think that the Warriors are not going to be the same team that they have been in the past this next season, but you know, you had to hold on to Draymond, I guess, and give it a few more tries. But yeah, I guess
I would.
Hunter, they're really banking on Brandon Podziemski to be the next bright star for them.
Yeah, I would disagree a little bit. I think for one, Brandon Podziemski does look a little Jordan Poole-esque, but I think he looks like a more gritty, more defensively oriented guy who I think can fill that role. I think that for one, you absolutely want to keep Draymond Green over Jordan Poole. He's the cornerstone of your offense and allows Steph Curry to do what he does. And he's a defensive presence. I think it was absolutely the right move. And I think people are underrating this Chris Paul move a little bit. Yes, you know, there's all these memes about them, you know, being rivals in the past, them hating each other. At the same time, I think Chris Paul provides a very different dynamic to this Warriors offense. This past year, the reason they lost to Lakers was because they could only shoot, and when their shot wasn't falling, they had nothing to rely on except for Steph Curry, hopefully bringing them out of the pit, which didn't happen. So I think adding Chris Paul gives you a second look in the more of the pick and roll style offense, a little bit slower paced, and also could possibly unlock some of the young guys. Chris Paul's a great mentor. We saw that in OKC. He could unlock a little bit of Moses Moody, a little bit of Kuminga, and I think provide them with the lobs and with other types of play that Draymond Green doesn't really do as a facilitator. So I think it's a solid move, and I think getting out of that Jordan Poole situation was necessary. So we can move on from there, talking about the Wizards. This is the team that obviously got Jordan Poole and also was able to re-sign Kyle Kuzma on a 4-year, $102 million deal. Obviously, they also traded away Kristaps, so they blew it up a little bit. But what are your thoughts on retaining Kyle Kuzma?
I mean, we're going to be seeing a master class in basically meaningless stats here with Kyle Kuzma and Jordan Poole playing on the same team. I actually think they're a pretty good pairing together. I'm kind of excited to watch this team, do nothing but like have some really entertaining highlights. Don't be surprised if you see like a couple
129
lobs from.
points a game.
Yeah, exactly. But letting the other team put up
This
150. So, yeah.
I was gonna say the average score of their games is gonna be like 145 to 130.
Yeah, something like that. It's going to be pretty ridiculous, but that's every team in the NBA. Wow, that was a lot. But the last thing we want to talk about in this episode is the in-season tournament, because they finally announced the sort of format for it. Hunter, if you want to sort of break down how this is going to work out.
Yeah, they had Richard Jefferson break this down, and I think he actually did a pretty good job of making it sound exciting, even though nobody cares. But the in-season tournament's going to be in November. It's going to be played as regular season games. So that was a big question. So all these teams that are they're going to be playing, it's going to be based on last year's regular season records. So that's how they're going to kind of cater, I guess, this next year's regular season to having the teams play when they need to play each other without it being confusing. How it's going to work is every team is going to be a part of it. It's going to be six groups, three in each conference, and you only play each team in your group once. So, you're going to have, I believe, five games, four games in total, five teams in each group. And then only the top team in each of the groups is going to move on to the next round, except for the wild card teams, which are the teams in both the East and the West, who did aren't in that top tier of teams in each of their comp or in each of their groupings, but have the best record in the NBA. So, for example, I know it's confusing, so let me just break this down. If let's say the Milwaukee Bucks are the number one seed in the East, and they just don't happen to care about this in-season tournament, and they just like kind of half-ass it, or they just don't win their games. Well, they're the best record in the entire NBA, so they have to play in the in-season tournament as the wild card team. So it kind of forces these good teams, in some sense, to at least have to try in this tournament, which I think is an interesting way of doing it. Next from there, when those top eight teams move on, it's going to be a single elimination game for those top eight, and then the top four teams end up playing in Las Vegas to get the trophy. And then the final game, it's I think they're calling it the NBA Cup is the reward, and each player also gets $500,000. That's kind of the main rundown of it. What are your thoughts on this, Rafa? And do you think there's any way this can be exciting?
It's really hard for me to sort of, find this exciting. This feels like it's artificially generated hype. Like even in the video, Richard Jefferson is like, it's going to be an exciting electric tournament. It's like, is it really though? I feel like, the fans don't seem to be particularly enthusiastic about it. The players, I haven't heard anybody be like, wow, I'm so excited for this kind of tournament here. There doesn't seem to be a real incentive for any of the teams to really take this very seriously. I think the format could work. I mean, maybe there might have to be some slight revisions as they did with the play-in tournament. But again, this just feels a little redundant. Like, why do we need an in-season tournament? I get that other sports league, particularly in European football, like they do that all the time. with like the FA Cup, but you know, those things have been there for decades, right? And so they've built up a sort of legacy of having some prestige attached to it. Just introducing a new tournament with no incentive, I don't know if it's going to really do anything. I am sort of excited to see how this plays out. You know, like maybe it will be really exciting. I'm not discounting the fact that, like, you know, maybe the players actually attach more weight to it than we think, and like there will be a sort of a bit of a brutal fight in a lot of competition to sort of claim that title because it has some inherent honor attached to it. But as of right now, not too excited about it. I think that the NBA really could have done away with this or not done it, and I would have been totally cool with that. But I'm excited, and I always think experimentation in sports leagues is a good thing. So, yeah, those are my thoughts. You got any differing opinions, or you kind of in the same boat?
I'm gonna sip it a little bit, but I would like to add that I think for the NBA, November is usually like the time of year where people kind of stop watching the regular season. It's not as exciting anymore. The first, October is when the season starts. People watch the first few games and they say, okay, I'm gonna wait till the playoffs now. So I think this is a way of getting the casual fan to kind of maybe watch the games a little bit. And I like that they're making these regular season games because maybe teams will say, hell, well, I have to play this game anyway. Might as well try to get $500,000 for free. Like maybe there are some teams out there, some guys on these teams who are like, I need the money. I'm gonna try. And no, it's not gonna be those superstars out there. But those superstars still wanna help out their boys. They still wanna get them their bags. It's not like they're only selfish. So I think there could be some actual fight, like you were saying, but I think it could be maybe that monetary incentive does help some of those role players play a little more aggressive. And maybe that gives LeBron James some reason to try a little bit during these few games during the regular season. I think there's some potential to make it more interesting to fans. Do I think this is going to get a lot of views? Not really at all. But, like you said, experimentation in leagues is good. And we'll see how this does this year. And if it just absolutely flops, they're probably not going to do it again.
Yeah, definitely. And honestly, more experimentation, the better. So, big fan of just at least trying new things. So, we'll see how it goes. I'm excited. But with that, that's, another episode in the books. Thank you all so much for listening. We should be back next week. Hopefully, the schedule starts to sort itself out. We had a lot going on with the whole 4th of July, traveling the Summer League. Just a lot going on as per usual. But hopefully we'll be back on a more consistent schedule. And yeah, thank you all so much for listening, and we'll see you then. Bye-bye.